lavish nor new, but had the comforting warmth of the old and familiar. The young man showed me to the sofa, then went around to the other side of the desk and sat down facing me. Holding his palms out towards me, he signaled for me to wait a while. Instead of saying, "Sorry to keep you waiting," he produced a slight smile, and instead of saying, "It will not take long," he held up one finger. He seemed to be able to express himself without words. I nodded once to signal that I understood. To have spoken in his presence would have seemed inappropriate and vulgar. As if holding a broken object, he picked up a book lying next to the computer and opened it to where he had left off. It was a thick black book without a dust jacket, so I could not make out the title. From the moment he opened it, you could see that the young man's concentration on his book was total. He seemed to have forgotten that I was there. I would have liked to read something, too, to pass the time, but nothing had been provided. I crossed my legs, settled into the sofa, and listened to Haydn, though if pressed I could not have sworn it was Haydn. It was nice music, but the kind that seems to melt into air the moment it emerges from its source. On the young man's desk, apart from the computer, was an ordinary black telephone, a pencil tray, and a calendar. I was wearing virtually the same outfit I had had on the day before, baseball jacket, hooded sweatshirt, blue jeans, and tennis shoes. I just grabbed whatever came to hand before leaving the house. In this immaculate, orderly room, in the presence of this immaculate, handsome youth, my tennis shoes looked especially dirty and worn out. No, they were dirty and worn out. The heels practically gone, the color an indeterminate gray, the uppers full of holes. Those shoes had been through a lot, soaking up everything in their path with fatal certainty. I'd worn them every day for the past year, climbing over the back wall countless times, stepping in dog shit now and then on trips down the alley, climbing down to the bottom of the well. No wonder they were dirty and worn out. Not since quitting my job had it occurred to me to think about what shoes I had on. Studying them so closely like this, I felt with new intensity just how alone I was, just how far the world had left me behind. It was time for me to buy a new pair of shoes, I told myself. These were just too awful. Before long, the Haydn came to an end, an abrupt and messy end. After a short pause, some kind of Bach harpsichord piece started, though I couldn't have sworn this was Bach either. I crossed and recrossed my legs. The telephone rang. The young man marked the place he was reading with a slip of paper, pushed his book aside, and picked up the receiver. He held it to his ear and gave a slight nod. Focusing on his desktop calendar, he marked it with a pencil. Then he held the receiver near the surface of the desk and rapped his knuckles twice against the wood, as if knocking on a door. After this, he hung up. The call had lasted some 20 seconds, during which the young man had not spoken a word. In fact, he had not made a sound with his voice since letting me into the room. Was he unable to talk? Certainly he could hear, judging from the way he had answered the phone, and listen to what was being said at the other end. He sat looking at his phone for a while as if in thought. Then he rose without a sound, walked around his desk, making straight for where I was sitting, and sat down next to me. He then placed his hands on his knees in perfect alignment. They were slim, refined hands, as one might have imagined from his face. His knuckles and finger joints did have a few wrinkles. There was no such thing as fingers without wrinkles. They needed a few, at least, to move and bend. But his fingers did not have many wrinkles, no more than the minimum necessary. I looked at his hands as unobtrusively as I could. This young man must be the woman's son, I thought. His fingers were shaped like hers. Once that thought entered my mind, I started to notice other points of resemblance. The small, rather sharp nose, the crystalline clarity of the eyes, the pleasant smile had begun to play about his lips again, appearing and disappearing with all the naturalness of a seaside cave at the mercy of the waves. Soon he rose to his feet in the same swift manner with which he had sat down beside me, and his lips silently formed the words, "This way, please." Despite the absence of sound, it was clear to me what he wanted to say. I stood and followed him. He opened